there's this idea that love should be hard, right? You know, that you should do anything for the person you love. You know, ain't no mountain high enough, ain't no valley low enough. You know, I'd do anything for you, dear, anything. But maybe that's not right. Maybe love just happens. According to our next storyteller, who I should say, she was willing to answer the questions in our next to normal "What's Love Got to Do with This?" quiz. And according to her answers, it's fairly straightforward. What is the one absolutely essential ingredient for a perfect date? Humor. What is the best advice you've ever received about love? Marry a person whose faults you can stand. What, without any argument or contradiction, is the greatest love song of all time? Johnny Mercer and the Angels Sing. And finally, our most important question, true or false, learning to love yourself, it is the greatest love of all. She simply says, really? Let's welcome Kathy Sutliff.
Hi. Like so many other couples, Brian and I sometimes get asked, well, how did you two meet? And like a lot of couples our age, the short answer is in a bar. The long answer is in a bar, a pool game, a distraction, and a blind date. So some 30 plus years ago, I transferred from a school in Ohio to Illinois State University. And it was at the end of the spring semester, and I was going to go start working for Shakespeare Festival for the first time. At about $1.25 an hour is what we figured I was going to be. And I don't think it's changed much. And so my friend Tina, who I had met at the university, had decided that I needed to get out more and I needed to meet some people. And she had in mind for me a guy I really should meet. And it was going to be great and we were going to click. And his name was Ron. And he was an artist, and she thought that the two of us would be perfect together. So she was going to take me to a bar. We were going to meet Ron. We're going to have a nice night. And then she and I were going to go back to my place. She was going to spend the night. Perfect plan. So we go on off to the gallery, and the gallery with one L for those of you who are counting and remember. And so we would go to the gallery, but the band hadn't started yet. And so we went downstairs to where the pool tables were and met a couple of her friends down there, Bob and Brian. Bob and Brian were best friends. Bob was a third grade school teacher, and Brian was an artist who was biding his time at Kinko's and soon to become a vintage clothing entrepreneur. And so we decided that in order to waste some time until the band started playing, we'd play some pool. So we played Boys Against the Girls, and they mopped the floor with us. They were so good. And why I love to play pool, I've never been terribly good at it. So the last shot's coming up. It's 8-ball, corner pocket. Brian's lining up the shot, his shot. So he's laying it up, and he's ready to take the shot, and Tina decides she is not going to lose to the guys this way. So she runs down to the corner pocket, she lifts up her skirt and goes, "Distraction!" Tina wasn't wearing any underwear. So Brian, who was an artist and had done lots of life drawing, says to himself, "I've drawn this 100 times. He wasn't going to let it bother him. So he lines it up, he pulls back his cue, he takes his shot, scratches. Girls win. So the band starts playing, we head on upstairs to the upstairs, and That Hope is playing. If you remember That Hope, they were a fabulous band. And we had a great time. We danced, we had some drinks, we had a good time, and all of a sudden I find myself with Brian again. Ron is nowhere to be found, by the way. So I'm talking with Brian, we're yelling over the music, having a good conversation, when all of a sudden, this massive curl comes in my periphery, curly, curly brown hair over here, and I hear this voice go, "Hi, Brian." Ex-girlfriend alert. Oh, no. I do not have any skin in the game. I do not have any claims on this guy. I am not going to fight an ex-girlfriend for his attention. See you, Brian. You're on your own. I turn around to see his expression on his face going, "Don't leave me alone with her." So I take off. So we have some more drinks, we have some more dancing, we're having a good time, and Ron still is not anywhere to be found. So it comes to be 2 o'clock, the bar's closing down, and we hear that there is, of course, an after hours on Cherry Street, because Cherry Street was notorious for great after hours. So we all hike it on over to Cherry Street, and we had a great time again. And there's Brian again. And as he put it later on, he was sprinkled with handsome dust that night. He had a gaggle of girls around him. He had like 6 or 7 women all like laughing at his jokes, buying him drinks, you know. He had a great time. And he could have had the pick of the litter. But somehow, I wasn't worried. Somehow, I just knew it was going to be okay. So it gets to be about 4 o'clock in the morning, and we're all going to wander on home, and we're heading south on Linden Street, and we're about to get to the corner where I was supposed to head home, and I'm trying to figure out, how am I going to trade Tina for Brian? How am I going to make this work? When Linda pipes up and goes, "Oh, I forgot my coat back at the party. Brian, would you walk me back?" Darts shoot out of my eyes. So Brian, being the gentleman that he is, he walks her back to the party. And as he's heading north on Linden and I'm heading east on College, the two of us are looking at each other, knowing that we want to be with each other and not with the party that we're with. So he's being a gentleman. He brings her back to the party. He gets her coat. He even drives her back to her apartment. He puts it in park. He goes, "Okay, there you go." And she looks at him and goes, "That's it?" And Brian knew in his heart of hearts, "Yeah, that's it. Thank you."